This morning, many of our sisters and brothers in the United Church of Christ will be culminating their journey through the assigned readings from the Old Testament, or Hebrew Scriptures, by hearing the account of the giving of the Ten Commandments from the book of Exodus. Given the tragic events in Las Vegas last Sunday night, and given the fact that this week contains not one but two special observances, Disability Awareness Week, and National Coming Out Day for our LGBTQ sisters and brothers, I decided to move in another direction in selecting our sacred reading for the day. I chose a passage from the Gospel of Matthew instead. Why? Let's see if I can help you understand. The passage that you're about to hear follows a series of teachings by Jesus called the Beatitudes. And as you might remember, the Beatitudes is a beautiful, poetic passage where Jesus sets out the values that ought to define his followers. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the merciful. You remember those, right? Well, the takeaway from that set of teachings is that to follow Jesus means to adopt a way of being that looks much different than the world's. Okay, so we're different. Some might conclude, we can just sit back then in our lawn chairs, sip our mimosas, and revel in our differentness, right? Well, that's where this morning's passage comes in. Listen carefully as I read the passage from Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 through 16. And then, let's see what Jesus says about the way we are called to manage our differentness. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt loses its saltiness, how will it become salty again? It's good for nothing, except to be thrown away and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city on top of a hill can't be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a basket. Instead, they put it on top of a lampstand, and it shines on all who are in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before people, so they can see the good things that you do and praise your Father who is in heaven. Thus ends the reading. Have you ever read a book that helped change the course of your entire life? I have. A couple, in fact. But one of them came out back in 1995, and it meant a lot. It was titled Prayers for Bobby, and it grabbed me from the very opening words of the first chapter. Let me read those words to you. Bobby Griffith left the family zoo lounge about midnight and walked northwest through downtown Portland, past office buildings and lofts that still bore the ornate imprint of another century. It was a warm but cloudy western night in late August 1983. Blonde, green-eyed, 6 feet tall, and muscular, Bobby wore a tight plaid shirt and green fatigue pants and walked with a deliberate, loping gait. To a passerby, he would have looked like any other young man on his way home after a night out. He headed up a hill and onto a plateau through which sliced Interstate 405, the main north-south artery. From this vantage point, one could see most of the city, aligned on either side of the Willamette River. Lights flickered in the foreground, yielding to patches of darkened residential neighborhoods, where most of Portland slept. The steady roar of freeway traffic played counterpoint to the stillness of the night. Bobby approached the Everett Street overpass. Once in the bridge, he could see the 405 traffic rush by and then disappear beneath the concrete span. The fragrance of diesel and petroleum hung in the air. What was he thinking? Perhaps he voiced the slight, silent wish, often repeated in his journal, to lift off, to set sail to the heavens, forever drifting. Perhaps the familiar Dark depression engulfed him, strangling hope. "My life is over as far as I'm concerned," Bobby wrote in his diary exactly 1 month earlier. "I hate living in this earth," he continued. "I think God must get a certain amount of self-satisfaction watching people deal with the obstacles that he throws in their path. I hate God for this and for my crappy existence." Bobby must have seen the large tractor trailer approaching from underneath the Couch Street overpass and timed his jump. Bobby executed a sudden and an effortless backflip, disappearing over the rail. The driver tried to swerve, but there was no time. The medical examiner said later that Robert Warren Griffith, age 20 years and 2 months, died instantly of massive internal injury. Friends, those opening words of chapter 1 tell a tragic story by any measure. But what makes that story even sadder was the reason young Bobby Griffith decided to take his life. See, Bobby was the second son born to Mary and Bob Griffith. While his father, Bob, was a quiet, introverted person, his mother, Mary, was not. She was a rigid woman whose faith was at the very center of her life. Mother Mary attended a conservative Presbyterian church in Walnut Creek, California, and it was there that the early lessons that she had learned in other churches about lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender persons were reinforced. Homosexuality is a sin, Mary had been taught, and the most loving response we can have toward those who identify as LGBTQ people is to take a hard line. Reject them, she was told, and then they will turn their lives around and find their way back to God. So Mary did as she was told. When her young son Bobby came out to her as a gay man, she made it clear that it and he were not okay. And her faith became a source of constant torment to her son Bobby, and even to Mary herself. And it was one of the primary things that led Bobby to that highway overpass that August night of 1983. While the opening words of the chapter were certainly impactful, they were not the words that set me in my vocational path. No, those words came later, near the end of the book, when the book's author closed with a final interview with Bobby's mother, Mary. Through the book, we learn that Bobby's suicide had set Mary on a journey or a course of exploration, a journey that had caused her to question the conclusions that others had spoon-fed her. Here is the defining exchange. "You talk about self-responsibility in regard to Bobby's death," the author observed, "yet you still cast blame on the church for the way that you used to be." Mary answered, "Yes, I'm aware that I have that anger, and I try very hard to keep it under control. But I can't deny my feelings that the church knew more than I did. I was ignorant, and I think I might find a little excuse for my stupidity. But if there is blood on my hands, there's blood on the church's. They're far more intelligent. They know more about Bible history, about how those cultures were at the times of the biblical writings, and they have the facts that are available today. Why didn't they share them then? And why aren't they sharing them now? I have a certain amount of guilt, but the church doesn't seem to have any. And I find that odd," she concluded. As someone who has spent his entire life in the church and has a deep faith in the God of Jesus, I knew Mary was right. I knew that too often, when faced with attacks on those who are different, the institutional church's response has been one of two things: silence or complicity. So much for being salt. So much for being light. Things needed to change. So Mary took matters in her own hand. In essence, she came out. No, not as a lesbian, but as a deeply religious, deeply bigoted person whose life had contributed to the death of her son. And in the process of telling her story, in sharing the journey toward the eventual love and acceptance of all God's children, Mary has given hope to many. As she finished telling her story, Mary included a beautiful letter that she once wrote to all those whose lives she had earlier helped to destroy, people that she called the Bobbies and the Janes of the world. Listen to her letter. To all the Bobbies and Janes out there, I say these words to you as I would my own precious children. Please don't give up hope on life or yourselves. You are very special to me, and I am working very hard to make this life a better and a safer place for you to live in. I firmly believe, though I did not back then, that my son Bobby's suicide is the end result of homophobia and ignorance within most Protestant and Catholic churches, and consequently, within society, our public schools, and even our own families. What a travesty of God's love for children to grow up believing themselves to be evil with only a slight inclination toward goodness. Is it any wonder our young people give up on love, as Bobby did, and the hope of ever receiving the validation they deserve as beautiful human beings? But as a result of my own son's death, I have joined other caring people to try and make a pathway with knowledge and understanding within our public school system, a pathway that in time may be traveled with dignity and freedom from fear for gay and lesbian students and any student who is subjected to discrimination. Promise me you will keep trying, she wrote. Bobby gave up on love. I hope you won't. You're always in my thoughts. Love, Mary. Friends, that's a beautiful letter, but it's one that should have never been written. For if progressive churches like ours had done a better job in coming out to the world, a better job of sharing our unshakable conviction that each and every child of God is of sacred value, Mary would have never had to write that letter in the first place. That's why I went into ministry, so that no other mother would have to write such a letter. I wanted to proclaim a gospel whereby every child of God knows how loved and sacred she or he is. No matter the gender of their beloved partner, no matter their level of physical or mental ability, no matter the color of their skin, no matter their gender identity, no matter the religious tradition of their spouse or partner, no matter their personal history, no matter, period. So, friends, in a week when many of our LGBTQ sisters and brothers will celebrate their decision to come out and share the beauty of their authentic self with their loved ones in the world, let us never forget how important it is for us here at Woodland Hills Community Church to individually and collectively incarnate our statement of welcome in words and in action that say, no matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you are welcome here. For as the story of Bobby Griffith reminds us, lives depend on our willingness to be salt for the earth and light for the world. Amen.